on your Wi-Fi radio,
on your iPhone. Commercial-free original talk, only on LA Talk Radio, your favorite talk station.
I don't know why I keep gaining weight.
A recent study shows that obesity can be caused by a virus.
Really? Like catching a cold?
Uh-huh. And that's why there's all new FatQuil.
FatQuil?
FatQuil kills the virus that causes obesity, so you don't have to do a thing.
Wow, great!
FatQuil, your mealtime snarfing, snacking, munching, gorging, stuffed gut, double lard so you don't have to exercise medicine.
This station presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Overprepared for a Day at the Beach Guy.
Overprepared for a Day at the Beach Guy.
To you, the beach means the simple things. Sun, sand, surf, three coolers of food, a half-acre white blanket, beach chairs, inflatable flotation devices, and a really good book.
You'll need a permit to build that beach tent.
Enjoy those 15 trips back and forth to the car.
Gotta get those dozen boogie boards, yeah.
So when you're next to a guy sitting under a designer sun canopy who has enough buckets and sand shovels to build the Taj Mahal, adjust your Speedo and salute to Mr. Overprepared for a Day at the Beach Guy, a real American hero. You know, getting away from it all doesn't mean bringing it all with you.
Get ready for the best morning show on any kind of radio. Broadcasting live from the palatial studios of LA Talk Radio. Get ready for Sam and Kara in the morning. Give Sam and Kara a call at 323-203-0815. And now, here are your hosts, Sam and Kara.
And good morning and welcome to Tuesday, March 23rd.
Life is good. We're an award-winning show, in case you missed it. We're an award-winning show.
Take it away, award-winning Steve. Show, folks.
I'm just going to keep saying it.
Welcome to a new world.
And we are award winners.
Yes. Okay. We didn't announce it yesterday, but the show was selected as one of Talkers Magazine, Frontiers... Talkers Magazine's Frontier 50, a selection of outstanding talk media webcasts. You see, we don't just mess around here, folks.
Listen.
We actually bring you some great radio. So we'll get into that in a few minutes. I brought the magazine with me, and I want you to see just how great we are, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're going to milk this. Let's be honest. Come
on. We've got to milk
it. Out of the blue.
We've got a whole year to milk
out of the blue.
The shit out of it.
Out of the blue.
Out of the blue.
Out of the blue. What are you going to do?
And you'll see when I read the article... This is a selection by the editorial staff. It's not just like people nominating you or, you know, people voting for you. I mean, these are like professionals that have been in talk radio for like who knows how many years.
I mean, I mean, how do we get on the list? I love our show, but come on, like it's
because we are out there, you know. I mean, people know of the station, they know of the shows and everything. We're not obscure. I mean, we put in 2 years into this.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And you know, and we are number one on Google when you type in talk radio. So how can people ignore us?
There you go. Yeah, I wish you guys could see Sam right now, because Sam was just like beaming like a 12-year-old. He's like, well, if you've been paying attention, here's the details. And we are number one on Google Radio. Okay.
There you go. We're number one everywhere and in everything. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I congratulate you, Kara, because
Aww.
You've made it. Partly possible.
Well,
I guess.
You know what? I don't know how, but I'm gonna totally take credit.
Yeah,
and
why not?
I'm gonna. Just,
it's your friggin' name on there.
I'm gonna friggin' shout it from the mountaintops. I already faced it. I've already posted on my Facebook and got like tons of responses.
Oh wow!
And
you're a friggin' star now.
Yeah, and I'm gonna start going into places and be like, "Do you know who I am? Okay, do you know who I am? Okay, yeah. Make that coffee quick.
Why don't we make a copy of this? Table of people that they put in the magazine and print it on a t-shirt or something.
Oh, yeah, let's do it. No, yeah. I'm serious.
And we'll circle
I'm
it
like
or
so
highlight
excited,
it,
yeah. You know? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think you've been laboring over the station for a long time and really working your show, and I'm glad I jumped in at the right damn time.
Yeah.
With my big-ass mouth.
But the point is that they made the selection of the shows while you were here, and that's what matters, you know. So.
Well, and I'm going to...
I ain't
gonna,
taking
gonna
all the credit.
Humbly, I'm going to humbly take all that credit.
Yeah, I mean, this show was always... designed as a two-person show.
Yeah.
It was never a one-person show.
Yeah.
So in the times between co-hosts and stuff, mm-hmm. I felt sort of like lost, you know?
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So
I would feel weird. I would feel weird if it was just me. I mean, I could talk to myself forever, but still, I don't know how entertaining it is.
Some people do that, and they do it great.
Oh, you do know? They?
Yes. Many people do show by themselves.
I guess TJ does. But doesn't TJ have, like, a bunch of people on and stuff?
Yeah, he does.
So like, it's kind of a revolving...
Yeah, but it's but he does 2 hours every day. That's pretty hard, you know.
Yeah.
So, yes. But the funny thing is, when he got started, he was his show was totally different. He was doing characters, funny characters, and
he's kind
and
of
he
a
would
nut.
Sing on the air and stuff.
He's crazy.
So, yeah.
I think he's really funny.
Yeah, he's really funny.
I'd love to see him do stand up. TJ, go do stand up.
He doesn't do a lot anymore.
I know. He told me that. He said he said he kind of gave it up. But so
we're in some good company.
Read some of those names there, okay. Sam. Let's come on. Let's toot this horn. Let's
all right. We've got Adam Carolla on here.
Okay. Adam Carolla has a huge, huge podcast.
Yes.
And I know so many people that love him and love his show.
Yeah. Although I can't stand him personally.
Oh,
I never
really?
Could. Yeah.
Really? I've never actually listened.
The way he talks, I don't like
him. Nah, he kind of has
that. Yeah, he's kind of whiny, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's really well established. And, I know a lot of comedians that love him. And I've
got to give him the credit, you know?
Yeah.
And he did very well on his morning show here in L.A., and now he's got a podcast. So, you see, everybody's going to the Internet. We also have, let's see, there's some people we don't know, but there's Tom Donahue. I don't know who that is. Tom Green. You know Tom Green,
Green,
right?
Yeah, Tom Green.
Yeah. And, of course, this is alphabetical, so they also have... who can I find real quick?
There's Dr.
Oh, they have Sam and Kara in the morning.
Oh, my gosh. We're Sam and Kara in the morning. That's crazy. Sam and Kara in the morning to you.
Yeah.
No, I saw that Dr. Laura is on there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Dr. Laura is on there.
And isn't there, there is a great, a pretty radical but funny and interesting political commentator, Mark Levine is on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard of him. And then isn't there Rush Limbaugh's on there?
His show is called Mark in the Morning, believe it or not.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is Rush Limbaugh on there?
No, he's not on here because
he's got his own category.
Yeah, well, he's on regular radio. He hasn't done much on internet, and that's why he's not on here.
Oh, okay.
So remember, this is for people that are on the cutting edge right now. You know, mostly, obviously, internet radio, which is where a lot of things are going. I mean, you know, when I went to that conference, a lot of people are really worried about not. Worried. I mean, many people are unemployed, you know, in radio.
Yeah.
And that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they were talking about internet radio and stuff, I just felt really great, you know, that we're in the right place in the right time.
Yeah. I was reading a little of the article, and they basically said that the 50 Frontier category isn't something that they plan on keeping forever because they don't expect internet to be that much of a pioneering thing forever. So
exactly. It's going to become mainstream.
It's becoming the new media. Just, I mean, if you just like being doing acting and stuff, I mean, I've done web stuff and everything moves, even commercials and some people are watching movies and a lot of stuff is, you know, moving over to the web. I mean, we've seen that for years. It's 2010. But even now, you know, like talk radio, people are going to the web. So it's not that it's going away. It's just transitioning, and it's just a different outlet. And
exactly. And now we're on the frontier. A few years ago, we'll become mainstream, you know?
Yeah.
And which is what I wanted to read to you. In fact, let me start from the end of this article because it's really cool. And look what it says. Okay, they're describing... like who is on the list. So they're saying this. Some perform their shows as isolated events on websites devoted to things other than radio. Others do them within the context of internet radio networks. Then there are those already on their way toward developing the media station concept of the modern talk platform. There are even the cyberspace street singers who put their previous... or I'm sorry, who put their precious wares and treasures out there on the pedestrian YouTubes of this brave new world.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so
yeah.
Check this out. I mean, this guy really goes all out, you know, about us. Some are already big stars in the terrestrial radio world and deserve inclusion on the list because, in spite of their success, they have worked vigorously and invested courageously to create an internet presence. An expansion of the work by attracting a predisposed audience to the new platform and showing how professional this new venue can be. So in other words...
they've kind of paved the way, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we took something that nobody knows about and we made it something that is actually viable.
Well, I think what he's also saying, you're right, but I think he's attributing those big names, right?
Right.
Like the Adam Carolla.
Exactly.
Sean Hannity, isn't he on that list too?
And some of them. But actually, they were on the list last year, but not this year. You see, that's the thing.
Okay.
We replaced some big names. In
we
fact, I don't
him
think
out.
Dr. Laura's on anymore, and neither is Sean Hannity.
Oh, really?
You know, and they've had several. Yeah, they've had quite a bit there. There were big names, and now I'm looking at.
I think it's kind of just spreading the attention, I think, is what it is. It's bringing. I don't really think it's saying that we surpass them, but it's saying that here's some great shows and giving exposure and that have pioneered the way. That
exactly.
And if you're always gonna feature the hugest names, then those people have such a following that, like you said, has transitioned from terrestrial radio to the internet.
And they've got their own lists, you know, whereas where they rank them by audience and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, come on, Rush Limbaugh, he like pretty much, you know, popularized talk radio.
Exactly, you know, but that's the thing is, I think they were looking for innovators. So they also say that others are relatively unknown, laboring in the obscure kitchen table loneliness of the frontier, clearing paths to a better future for themselves and the rest of us who will enjoy the unlimited benefits of the roads they are paving.
Mm. Cool.
Now check this out. You're going to like this one. Pay attention. Some of these unknown folks are heading to inevitable superstardom.
Okay? He looked at me.
I
Woo!
Like that one. Others are merely on the way to attaining huge wealth with limited fame. Not so bad a fate in this day and age. And some, of course, are just bright little sparks that will fade quickly in the torrent of time.
Well, that sounded bleak, but
yeah,
whatever.
So, no, but obviously that's not us because we're not stopping.
No.
We're
you guys don't understand.
Here.
Sam is like a little engine that could. This dude doesn't stop all day working on this thing, and it's hysterical. I well deserved, Sam, I must say.
Yeah, and actually that's not all of it. We're going to keep on going.
No, go. Milk it. Let's get our 15 seconds in or 15 hours, whatever.
Yeah, but so that was sort of like they described who was getting it, but... here, they also tell you, like, why, you know? And let's see. So they said that the... why didn't I highlight this? Okay, so the next accolade is awarded to the best commercial... Okay, so that's not it. In this era of... I'm sorry, I'm just doing this, like, really quick here. Oh, you know what? It's no... I'm reading the wrong friggin' article... And I'm wondering why the hell.
That's funny. Sam's a little flustered, guys. He's really happy. So am I.
I am. I'm like extremely excited.
Sam came walking down the hallway this morning on a mission. He's like, oh, we're going to hit this up. He's like, I got the article. I'm all over this.
I'm all over this thing.
He's like, Operation Throwdown.
Yeah. Okay, so it says this. The list does not presume to quantify the talent, listenership, or importance of the players involved.
So basically, it means nothing. No, I'm just playing.
Yeah.
Basically, it's they drew our name out of a hat. I'm just playing.
But this is interesting because, look, you obviously read the same thing I did. It says, we do not foresee internet talk media remaining a frontier or a pioneering enterprise for all that long a period.
Mm-hmm.
This new platform is well on its way to becoming the establishment at an exponentially increasing rate of acceleration.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping that in mind, we should savor this creative, opportunity-rich period of its infancy while we still have it. A colorful chapter of new media history that this list endeavors to celebrate. Another difference about this group, it does not confine the role of performer to that of a host or limit inclusion to only those talent who enact... You know what?
Talks about being a disc jockey. And
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
And it's saying it's a very broad kind of platform that they were looking at. It was, I think, really looking for something beyond the host that just has callers and the host that just does music. Basically.
Exactly. And so the point, the gist of this article is the people on this list are people that are innovators,
mm-hmm.
people that come up with new stuff, different stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying, I mean, you know, we have a very unique show. You know,
mm-hmm.
you don't hear that many shows like that out there. And, you know, we're able to say what we want and stuff. And that sets us apart from terrestrial radio,
mm-hmm.
you know.
No, it's really awesome, yeah.
And from other internet shows out there, I mean, you know, I mean... I know I'm a little biased and everything, but a lot of stuff out there is garbage. I mean, and that's why our station's good, because I made it a point to make it good. You know?
Way to go, Sam.
Not just to take any trash out there. You know?
Way to go, Sam.
So, yeah, so we're self-congratulatory
today. And thanks to the
listeners
and the support. I mean, there's a lot of great listeners out there, so.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, it's in the tens of thousands a month, you know, so I'm really proud, you know, because.
That's awesome. Yeah, we should have a party.
We should, huh?
Let's have a celebratory party.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have a party friggin' every day, for crying out loud.
I'm all
you know?
Down with that.
We're blazing the road.
You guys, Sam, I mean, I'm really grateful to be a part of it. But, Sam, I think you've worked really hard, and it's very well deserved. And I know that you're just, like, on cloud nine. Mm. He's like, woohoo!
Yeah. And it was cool to find out about this while I was at the convention with all these people, all these, you know, big radio people.
That must have been a real rush, huh? You're sitting there like, oh, I'm just going to go and check it out and learn and
I just wanted
people.
To get up and scream, you know, I won, you know. I'm on the frontier, you know, pay attention.
But give me attention.
But the good thing is I found out a lot of people have heard about us, so that's a cool thing.
Wow. Know?
Yeah, so we're making our mark out there, and for crying out loud, I think we've made it.
That's so fun.
You know.
Yay! That sounds cool, man. Yeah. I'm so excited to be a part of it.
Wonderful. So how are you feeling this morning? Are you still in pain?
I'm still in a little bit of pain. I did run, for those of y'all who remember, I ran the marathon on Sunday. It was stupid. It wasn't stupid, actually. I got to tell you, there's a rush about taking risk. There is a rush with going, you know what? I may not barely be able to finish this damn thing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I didn't sign up or pay my $125, but whatever.
Yeah.
Carpe damn diem.
Yeah.
Seize the day.
There you go.
So I just left my house and started running until I saw a bunch of other runners and the just collective energy, like I said, and I jumped in and everybody's in pain. And so you just, I also mentally love it psychological is you go, don't fight the pain because you're going to stop. You have to embrace it as though it's normal. There's going to be stuff.
Part of it.
Yeah, you've got to embrace the fact that there's going to be things that start to turn off a bit. So what made sense, I'm actually doing great comparatively. I mean, I'm still in some pain, but my left knee around like the 8th or 9th mile, which is not a lot of miles compared to 26 miles, around the 8 or 9 miles in, my left knee started hurting, and then both my ankles started hurting, and I was like, oh, crap. Normally, if I'm just running on my own, I stop, and I just call it a day because I don't want to push it, and I don't want to be out for weeks.
Yeah.
I don't want to...
Yeah, don't injure yourself.
Yeah, I don't do it, but in this situation, you have to do it. So I just was like, okay, well, it's going to hurt, and that's okay, and until I absolutely can't go anymore, I'm going to keep going. So I overcompensated, and I felt like if I didn't bend my left knee that much, it didn't hurt that bad. So I used my right leg a lot, and so which is why the back of my right leg hurts. And I just realized the tops of my thighs were rubbing together, and I didn't have Body Glide is what you use to kind of put in, like, for men, they put it on, like, their nipples and... because so what happens
the
is
the friction
when,
of the clothes.
Yeah, and well, yeah. And not just that, it's when you sweat, all the salt, and then when it dries, like, so the salt chafes.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's not just the sweat, it's the clothing, and it's the mainly the salt.
I see.
So I was looking for Vaseline that morning, because usually you could use Vaseline as well. I couldn't find any. So I found, like, some weird, like, eye serum lotion that you for wrinkles, and I just put it on between my thighs, and it didn't do a damn thing.
You don't have any KY lying around?
No. You know what my roommates do, though?
What?
My roommates that are married do, and I thought, that'd be so nasty. If I went in there, I was like... like, you know, using their KY. That'd be so disgusting. I didn't use it, no. But I just, like, whatever. I'm like, whatever, just go for it. So I did feel some... burning between my legs, but my upper thighs, I felt a little bit of chafing, and I was like, no big deal, it's not that bad. Well, yesterday at the end of the day, it like fully developed. I guess there's like a delayed reaction, and it looks like there's two tire marks in between my. It'll go away. It'll go away. I put like Neosporin and stuff on it, but it looks like I got a bad case of I'm assuming herpes or something.
Yeah.
I don't have it.
Examine it.
No,
I'm
good. I'm good. No, it's just a little bit of redness, but it's just funny. It doesn't. Yeah. It's definitely not attractive.
It's funny the things that happen that you don't think about. You
yeah,
know,
you don't. But it's like your war wounds. I mean, guys get guys like to show you their scars, and they're like, I play football one time. My freaking skull came out of my freaking skin, and I put it back in and attached my foot to myself, and you know. So there's something about running a marathon that's exciting, that you go, okay, well, I ran through two hurt ankles, a really, really bad left knee and a pulled some pulled tendons. Mm. And I ran through it and then collapsed at the end.
Wow.
Yeah. It was.
Well, that's, yeah, I still think it's cool that you,
I'm
that
just,
you did it,
I, it's,
you know?
It's exciting. And now I want to do another one. I think I'm going to do it in the fall in San Diego.
Oh, really?
So if LA Talk Radio wants to sponsor me, I'm just throwing it out there. You can.
Okay.
And I'll wear a bunch of LA Talk Radio, Sam and Karen in the morning, and then we're the top 50 Frontier. Okay?
I see.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
Anyway. But, yeah, because there's a lot of people that run for the cause, and they do all this stuff, and they got their little gear on. And I thought it'd be cool, not just me, if we wanted to kind of take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else wants to start training for a marathon, do it 6 months out.
Yeah. So you think you'll be able to do 26 miles?
Oh yeah. I mean, I did 17.
Right.
I did 17, and that was with no training. But I mean, I do run. I run around 5 to 10 miles. And honestly, like I said, when I go into the mountains, or the, you know, the hills and not the mountains, but yeah, like Griffith Park or Runyon Canyon, I'm running up hills.
Right.
It's about double the mileage because of the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I started that back in October, basically training in the hills. And, That's more cardiovascularly hard than what I ran because
right.
I was so limited by my my bones and my mm-hmm. my just muscles were over
right
overworked. So I didn't feel extremely fatigued. I was tired, but I didn't feel like I was going to throw up or like this is so hard. I was just in pain.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if I had great shoes and I had been training my muscles and basically my body to kind of handle that kind of that kind of impact over, because I started at 9, like a little after 9,
right,
and around 9 o'clock, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, yeah, that was about
4 hours.
Yeah, it's about 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours of just running.
Weren't you afraid that you're gonna hurt yourself somehow?
I just feel like I'm a damn hoss, man. Mm. I'm from Texas. I'm a built girl.
Mm-hmm.
I feel really like I can handle stuff. I don't know what it is, but it's part of it's really mental, but I'm not a little fragile bird.
No.
I mean, you know, feed me well, give me some water and some good shoes, boom, and 5 sports bras. I am ready to rock. But seriously, I feel really strong, and it's so I went to a coffee shop yesterday. Of course, it's what I do if I'm working on the computer, cuz it's just fun to have atmosphere. And this guy, he didn't have anywhere to sit because it was just so packed. Everybody's on their laptop. I said, oh, you can sit right here and share the table, because that's what you do. It's just courteous. And
you see, it never happens to me. I mean,
well, you need to go.
I never meet nice girls that would say, here, sit here.
Well, I mean, you need to go.
But that was nice of you. Okay, go ahead.
Well, what am I going to do, hog the table when there's nowhere to sit? And clearly I'm hogging the table. I have my stuff everywhere.
Oh, with your computer and everything.
Yeah, and there's tons of people on their computers everywhere.
Right.
You know, it's L.A. Everybody's writing on something, some screenplay or something. And I'm on Facebook. No, I'm just like, I'm part of an award-winning show. I'm really doing some major work right now. No, but I said, yeah, sure, go ahead and sit down. And he did sit down.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a good-looking guy. But he's older, and it just wasn't, I don't know, I wasn't really going there with it. I was,
right.
I wasn't feeling it. But he started in with the you know, trying to be flirty.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too, it was a, he's European. He's from Italy.
Yeah.
Italia.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, the guys are just more.
Italiano.
Yeah, they're much more upfront and forward.
Right.
Forward, I
uh-huh.
think. Foreign men. Because they don't, I don't know, they don't play around. But he just sized, it's funny because he kind of just sized me up. He's like, yeah, you're a beautiful girl. I was like, oh, okay. Type in my computer. I was like, oh, okay, cool. He's like, and I was chatting with him a little bit and whatever. I love meeting new people. It
right.
doesn't have to be a physical. It doesn't have to be attraction for me at all. And he's like, you are really healthy. I started laughing so hard. He's like, what? What? That's a good thing. I was like, yeah, so I can stand a long, cold winter and not die. Thanks. Thanks. He's like,
yeah, good marriage material.
He's like, you are good and healthy. You are a healthy girl. And I was like, good for me. I'm a healthy girl. I was laughing so hard. And honestly, I don't take it as an offense because I like being healthy.
Yeah.
But it's funny, in L.A.
But what do you think he meant?
He meant that I was voluptuous, and he even said
he meant,
he's like, you're a curvy woman, and you look healthy, and you look you know, your face is rosy and all that stuff. I was like, okay, tell me what you really feel. I've only met you for the last 15 minutes, but that's cool.
Yeah.
And I could tell he was kind of like sizing me up, like, oh, she'd be good woman for mating, and we take her to house, and she cook a nice goulash soup, and she skin bear and make good fur coat for me. Like something like that. I knew he was thinking that was totally the wrong accent. But anyway.
Wrong food, too.
And everything. But my point is, he was doing that whole like kind of the things that you think of subliminally, I guess, or you're not even aware of, but maybe why people are attracted to people. He was like saying it out loud. Mm-hmm. And it was very, I thought it was hysterical. Yeah. I mean, most people would be really offended.
It is pretty funny.
It's hysterical. It's like, okay, well, tell me how you really feel. And but most women in LA would be so offended. I've heard a girl that I knew. She was like, my aunt called me healthy. She's like, I'm so fat. I am so fat. She called me healthy. Because we live in a society that nobody wants to look healthy. Everybody wants to look like freaking heroin chic. They want to look like they've been, you know, they've been tripping for less.
So you think when people say healthy, they mean some meat on your bones?
I don't know how everybody means it. I guess the way I took it was that I was a thick girl that was curvaceous. And he did say that I was curvy. Mm. I don't really need it to be pointed out. I know that. Hey, by the way, you're really curvy. Oh, okay. It's my own body. I didn't know that. Really? That's what I'm dealing with here? Okay, thanks. You're real curvy and voluptuous. Yeah, okay, well, whatever.
Yeah. Like, what kind of a compliment is that, you know?
I didn't take it offensively. I don't feel like he was saying I was a badass.
Yeah, no, not offensively, but it's not a compliment either. I mean, what is it exactly? I'm not sure.
I think he's sizing me up out loud is what he was doing.
Yeah.
He's like, you good for a woman and stuff, and you good take home to mother and whatever. I don't know. It was just really funny. But no, I mean, I don't think it was like a fat thing or anything like that. It was just one of those. Here's the humor. Mm-hmm. It is funny that we live in a culture where when you're just an average-sized girl, it's exotic. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
When you're living in Hollywood or an area where everybody's so not just thin, but just it's just not natural thin.
Right.
And then there's somebody that just is average-sized, mm-hmm. and you're like, hey, I like what you got going on here.
Yeah.
It's just funny. Yeah. It's funny.
It's all relative, I guess.
Yeah, it's very relative. So I really thought it was funny. So.
Yeah. That's funny. So how did it end up?
He asked me out, and I was like, ooh, yeah.
Oh, he did.
Yeah. Of course he did, yeah.
Yeah. So, you see, that's the thing. You have to understand something. When you invite a guy to sit next to you, mm-hmm. you pretty much can expect that.
Well, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, if I was sitting here complaining about it, then, you know, you can – I know people that complain about the weird guys, and yet they put themselves out there. I'm like, well, I don't complain about it because I just – I'm fascinated, and I love people. And we had a really funny conversation, and he was actually a really cool guy. I'm just not attracted to him.
Yeah.
And I did tell him.
So what did you say?
I said, look, I said, it's probably not going to go the way you want it to. I said, I don't mean to be rude, but I said, can we just talk to each other like we're both men for a second?
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to talk to you like we're both guys. Okay? Men don't want to just be friends, generally. They don't want to be just friends with a girl they just met. They don't want to just do the buddy thing.
Right.
And women can do that. I can do that. I enjoy having guy friends. Mm-hmm. And I said, I would love to go out and hang out, and it'd be just fun. But I know that that's not really what you want. And so it really wouldn't be cool for us to go out and then we have a good time and then you feel taken advantage of, or you feel like I'm like, oh, you're such a sweet friend. Yeah, you know, guys don't want that.
Yeah.
And so let's just get to the point. So I'm just not really interested in that level with you. So
good. Yeah. Well, you let him down easy.
Well, it's just, I mean, because I would hang out with the guy if he would not freaking try to hit on me and just have fun, because he was cool. He was really funny.
Mm.
He's really cool.
Yeah.
But no, it just tends to be when, you know, guys just don't want girlfriends unless they happen to somehow meet them and they're not attracted to them, or they can't be attracted to them for some reason. Something like that, usually.
Well, you know, like you said, I mean, you got it figured out pretty well.
Yeah, I only have I have a handful of really good guy friends, and they're all strictly platonic. There's only one of those guy friends that actually liked me at one point.
Right. But I'm willing to bet you they'd all nail you if they could.
No.
You want to bet?
No, a few of them are gay, number one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a different...
Yeah, a few of them are married.
Uh-huh.
So that's not going to happen. No,
I didn't say it's going to happen.
No, I know. But I know there's not an attraction. There's like a brother vibe. Mm. And then one of them, the one that did kind of like me for a hot second was we just became really close and became buddies. And so right. we crossed into the friend zone. So right. That ability to be attracted was diffused, and we did a lot of group hangouts, and it just, you know, and you know when guys are just kind of like, they don't even know what, they're just like, oh, I'm attracted to you. They just like you for the stupid reasons. Oh, yeah. You're pretty, or oh, you know, you're built, or you're funny, or you're whatever it is on the surface. I know that as soon as I introduce them to like 10 of my other really great, awesome girlfriends, they're going to equally like them too.
Right.
I know they don't see me.
Mm.
I know they're not attracted to, not because they don't know me, but because they're not even interested in knowing me. They're just attracted to the peripheral.
Yeah.
So I know as soon as I introduce them to like 5 or 10 other girls, they're going to be equally interested in all of them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's the case here. Okay, we're going to call an author, our guest.
Okay.
And she wrote a book called The Hunger Within.
That sounds really intense.
Her name is Marilyn Migliori, I think. So let's call her and find out what this is all about. We're going to talk about obesity and eating and emotional eating and that sort of thing. So,
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice.
No, you're not serious, are you? Okay, let's try it again. This kind of sucks, huh?
What's her name again?
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message.
Okay. Well, what's the case here? Okay, I thought I had the number correctly. But what do I know, right? Let's try it one more time. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So, well, maybe something happened to her phone. Who knows? Karen, are you with me?
I'm with you, man.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Are you into Facebook?
I am into Facebook.
Yeah. Right now, I mean.
No, not right now.
Forwarded to an automatic
voice system.
All right. Well, we do have a studio guest today.
Well, that's awesome. Wait a minute. Did you call the right number? Because, you know, we've been through this. And the wrong author?
No, I've got the right number here. That's what I'm calling.
Okay.
Yeah, they sent me a number.
What's her name again?
Her name is Marilyn Migliori.
Marilyn Migliori. Marilyn Migliori. Marilyn Migliori.
Migliori.
It's time to call.
Yes.
Pick up your phone, lady.
I sure hope it's today, though, but I'm pretty sure. I mean, look, I'm looking here, and it says the 23rd, right? That's today.
Yeah, it's the 23rd.
Yeah. Well, maybe they thought Eastern time or something. I don't know.
Well, they're a West Coast show. Well, whatever.
Anyway, yeah. So, okay, so you know what? Let's take a little break, and we'll be back right after this.
For the most entertaining talk anywhere, stay tuned to LA Talk Radio. Your real time station with 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Oh, Shitty Talk Radio proliferates the internet. Two people have teamed up to save the world. It's Sam and Kara in the morning. Only on LA Talk Radio.
I love that. I love that. You got it down.
I like the way that it's like really chilling. I like the like. Ooh. It just sounds cool, doesn't it? It's like really nice. Really, really nice. Hello. My name is your new guest right here. I wrote a book, okay? And the book is called How to Have a Fake Accent.
Oh, I thought it was The Hunger Within.
Oh, that
I thought
too.
You were going to actually
do The Hunger Within. We'll it's a great interview. Book. Go out and buy it. I don't know anything about it, but it's a great book.
Yeah.
No, I would love to actually hear more about her book. That sounds good. So maybe we'll have her on as a guest sometime.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And we have an upcoming guest in the studio in a few minutes.
Oh, cool. Who is
it? Her name is Shirley Wilson. She's a host on the station.
Oh, really?
And she's been through a tragedy or two. And lost her son to violence.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, so she wrote a book, and she wants to promote it and everything, and I think it's a pretty interesting story to hear. So, not to bring you down or anything, but I think it's a story full of inspiration.
Okay, well, we can do that. We're a very broad-based, award-winning show. We are very broad. We're very, very open. Broad, open, award-winning show, okay? Sounds super. Sounds good.
So Obama signs landmark health care bill into law.
We're going to go way into this tomorrow, and it's called The Health Care Bill is Good for Your Health. And
You already gave it a title?
I already gave it a title. I got a lot of people that are really interested on both sides. They're going to call in. And it's really interesting because there's a lot that people – the way that it's being presented to the public – it's possible that it's completely different what's actually going on. And that's the thing. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just bringing stuff to the light and getting people to kind of research it on their own. Mm-hmm. It's not really telling people what to think. It's just kind of saying this are things that are going on and getting people to kind of look themselves further into it. There's 39 states right now that are suing.
Oh, really?
Because of the bill. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be doing some reading on that.
Please do. There's a lot about it that's deemed unconstitutional. So there's a lot of things about the bill and the way that it's been pushed through and a lot of things that are...
I know. It's not going to start that easily, you know? I mean, there's... or that soon, anyway. You know?
Well, I mean, what we're seeing...
they're talking like 2014 and shit, you know?
Well, if you knew how much money they're talking about spending and how much, where is this money going to come from, number one,
right.
And it's from all of us. Mm-hmm. And then number two, the fact that it's forcing people, whether you like it or not, you have to buy this. Mm-hmm. That's basically taxation without representation.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really shady things about it. So that's why, I mean, that's the case for why 39 states... Mm-hmm. Of how many states do we have? 52?
50.
50.
My dear. 50. It's always going to be 50.
I'm a little off. So, no, 39 states are suing out of 50. because they're saying this isn't what the American people want, is what they're saying.
Yeah.
It's not that American people don't want free health care. Who doesn't want free health care? But it's not free. People need to wake up.
Free,
it's not free, man.
No, it's not. I mean, it's very complicated.
It's
too,
very complicated. So it's not finished being. They're trying to pass something that's not finished being written.
Yeah.
So that they can at the end tack on a bunch of stuff. So once it gets passed, and they add stuff in.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, it's starting to sound like socialism. You know.
I would totally agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening is that, like I said, a lot of people that are excited about this is because, well, we look at our healthcare now and we think there needs to be a lot of reformation. And I would agree. I think our healthcare does need reformation. But this, what people don't understand is this isn't about reformation. Mm-hmm. This isn't about provision. This is about takeover, in my opinion. This is about taking over your choices and your rights. And it's not about, it's not a compassionate, everybody gets, this isn't about this. It takes away your right to choose the doctor, the kind of insurance you want. There's a lot of things in there that if people looked beyond the whole idea of free healthcare and looked into it, they would be shocked.
Yeah.
They'd be shocked.
Yeah.
But the reality is we'll go into it tomorrow a lot, and it'll give people an opportunity to kind of hear different sides of it. And then
there are different sides. I mean, because,
absolutely.
You know, you have many people in this country that do not have health insurance.
Yeah, well,
you know,
I don't have health insurance.
And they get sick or die or whatever.
Well, there's many different ways to look at it, and that's one thing that we'll talk about tomorrow is
well, what about those situations? And what about this? And what do we already have in place? Is it already working or not working? There's a lot of great things we're going to talk about. For example, the state of Massachusetts has already had basically a version of socialized health care, I think, for the past year or so. And it has not worked.
Not worked, huh?
Not worked.
It does work in some countries, but I don't know that
you
it would here. You
people know? Don't understand, though, the size of Canada, the whole population of Canada can fit into, what, New York? Something like that. And
really?
Then, yeah, and like Israel has great socialized healthcare, and they're still like they're a tiny fraction for the population of the U.S. I mean, it takes like 23 Frances to fit in the state of Texas. Mm-hmm. So we're using systems that, you know, that are that if you want to say they're working, in some ways they're working, in some ways they're not, because the healthcare system here, which isn't perfect. I'm not really defending our healthcare in the sense of it's not flawed, because it is. Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to specialists, when it comes to cancer, people come to the U.S. They come to Houston. They go to tons of different specialist centers, burn centers, cancer centers. And I've heard so many firsthand stories of people that have done that. And we have some of the top just medical fields here.
Yeah.
But again, we're going to go into it tomorrow more, and there'll be people calling in from different countries and we're going to have, you know, a
different
lot of different
countries.
Like, for example, my roommate Sarah is from Canada, and she just doesn't get it. She just thinks, like, what's the big deal? Healthcare in Canada is awesome. It works out great. You guys need to get this. And she thinks capitalism totally sucks. And so she's going to call in and kind of give her two cents. And she's got some really good points, though.
Yeah.
She's got some great points. And we're encouraging people of all different backgrounds and political beliefs to kind of call in. And really, it's not about it's not going to be about bombarding people as much as it is about trying to really kind of air out what I think isn't being talked about, and then also get some feedback from opposing viewpoints, and then get people to hopefully look into it for themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, so how come your roommate Sarah is here? Because she seems to be like her heart is in Canada, right?
Well, I mean, the thing is that she moved out here for the entertainment industry, and she can't really – I mean, the entertainment industry is so limited up in Canada.
Yeah.
It's not a Hollywood. It's not – I mean, she kind of maxed out there. And the thing is that she wants to do a lot of films and make her own movies. And she's so talented. I mean, she is a talented girl. And I'm telling you, I don't know a lot of women that – I mean, there are, but I'm not saying I personally know of a lot of women that are as funny as she is and as – just all around talented. And and I love her. I love her sense of humor, and she's just hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, she is so freaking funny. She's gonna.
So are you bringing anybody to the studio tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
My other roommate Claire, haven't met. She'll be in tomorrow.
That's the one that's married, right?
She's married. She's a former little beauty queen. Moved out to LA for the big flashy lights, and she's really just become very politically active and knowledgeable, and just an average everyday person that's just really taken interest in the political climate, and has really gotten well informed on a lot of issues. But she's just an average everyday person, so it's not like she's coming on as an expert. She's coming on as somebody that says, this is what I see happening, this is where you can go look it up, and go, you know, do the research from here on out on yourself.
Yeah. Well, it's good that there's people passionate about this, you know.
Well, yeah,
and
I mean,
informed opinions, you know. And
absolutely.
They don't just sit back and let it happen.
Yeah, and I'm trying to get I might have a friend of mine. He's a lawyer, and he's extremely much more liberal, and is very much for the healthcare bill. And I would love to get him on. We may have to call him though, because he may be in office, but he is very passionate about it as well. So I think it would be a really good a conversation to extract both sides.
Right.
Yeah. Even though I'm leaning against it very much so, I definitely want to bring up different points for the listeners so that they can, and not that they haven't already heard it, or you could probably go to so many different web and news sources to get the information, but you know, it's very relevant, and definitely I think it's important to kind of bring it to light.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You know?
So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of news, you know. I don't know what's important and what's not. But they're saying that Hitler sought cordial relations with the UK. So this is kind of, they found a letter written by Adolf Hitler in 1931 expressing hope for a truly cordial relationship between Britain and Germany.
What the heck is that about?
Yeah.
So what do we need to work? So good for them. So what's the news? I'm concerned. I'm confused.
Well, the news is that they found this letter, okay? And it says that Hitler was hoping to actually align himself with the UK rather than fight. You know, so
does that make him a good guy or something?
No, not at all, not at all. But I think it is newsworthy. You know?
Yeah. Well, it didn't work out too well, did it?
Yeah.
He did, what is it called, those raids?
He wrote the letter 16 months before he became chancellor and seized power in 1933. Okay, so that was before he was, before he seized power with the coup and everything, you know?
Yeah, just still not a really great guy in my book. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not really.
Evil incarnate.
You know who's really freaking funny? Is David Spade.
Yeah, you think he's funny?
Well, I heard him the other day on the radio, and he was co-hosting a really funny radio station. And, you know, they do all the hit songs and the hit beats and everything.
Right.
And he was just like, next up we're going to have Yo-Yo on the radio. And he's just talking about how, like, he knows none of the pop artists. And there's stories about him where he reportedly was seen with two pop stars. One was Katy Perry and one was Kesha. Mm-hmm. And apparently it was reported by Kesha that he snubbed them and she stole his Jack Daniels, like some fabricated funny haha story. He's going, come on, guys. Come on. Look at me. Look at them. They're hot.
Yeah.
Would I really snub them? Does that look like I'd snub somebody? If I had a fan, I wouldn't snub one fan. He's hysterical. He's just like, I like seeing people in Hollywood that are really creative and funny and just so not into their own hype and very down to earth.
Yeah. He's funny, you know. Did you ever see him doing stand up and stuff?
I haven't seen a lot of his stand up, but his movies are funny and he's just funny.
Yeah. Let's hear a little clip here of him doing a stand up on dating.
Horrible date all through high school and college. His impression of me on a date in high school. Come on, chug it. Thank you. Little drinky poo. Here's my impression of a girl in high school I invited to a party at my house. So, where is everybody? It just took off. How about a jacuzzi? Sploosh! Here's the last thing a girl in high school says to me on a date. Why'd you put my fucking drinks in? Okay, that's enough. That's quite enough. I like to split the crowd in half right at the top.
Okay, well, he's a little slow on this one.
Yeah, he's a little slow on that one.
Yeah.
That's funny, though.
But, yeah.
I like him. He's cool. He's doing a new movie with Adam Sandler called Grown Ups.
Yeah. It's amazing. He started on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
And or at least that's where he became famous.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of great stars came out of Saturday Night Live. There used to be a period. I remember when it started, like around 1976, 77 is when it was launched, I think. And it's still around, you know, 30-some years later.
It has such a staying power and a history. You know, Saturday Night Live has definitely had its ups and downs where it's been just more funny.
Yeah. No, definitely. And there were times.
There's been times when it's been just like, are you kidding me? These people get to do this for a living and they suck?
Yeah.
That's so not fair.
I know. But, you know, I mean, when you saw people like John Belushi and Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd, you know, Bill Murray. I mean, those were all on there, and you knew they were going to be like stars. You know, they were just incredibly talented, incredibly funny. And
I just think that humor has. I mean, there's still. I mean, there's some amazing comics out there. It's not that they're not out there, but I think there's a lot of really, really crappy ones. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but especially in L.A., there's this weird kind of like. I go to the comedy clubs. I see it. It's this. I'm gonna be a bigger asshole than you is the attitude. It's not about, hey, I'm actually worked on a set, mm-hmm. and it's to serve the audience and it's to really bring life and really freaking make you boil over laughing, right. Double over laughing. It's just about ego.
Yeah.
And the audience can tell. I mean, you may be into your own hype and be a total douchebag, but guess what? The audience that pays money and buys a 2-drink minimum and pays to freaking park their car to come see. give him a show and shut up. Just give him something to laugh about and get off the stage. It's so many guys get up there and girls, but it mainly guys. It's this attitude of like, they try to intimidate the audience. They try to, intimidate the audience to laugh at them. And they make fun of the comic before them or the whatever, the next comic coming up. Mm. And it's just, it's not about the material or it's not about really sharing something. It's sometimes just about, hey, I'm this insecure guy that was in high school and now here's my time to like get back at everybody and be a big douche.
Yeah.
I'm just.
But there's a lot of competition in comedy. I know that.
Yeah,
I
mean, well, absolutely. So
many, everybody calls themselves a comedian, you know?
Whatever.
The amazing thing is on Facebook, it's like all. It seems like most of the people with a lot of friends are comedians. They're all like in the same circles.
There's just a lot of really angry people, though, that are like, yeah, I'm angry and kind of funny, but I'm angry.
Yeah.
And their whole thing is, I'm going to put down a new person. Like, I know this guy who. Granted, he can be funny when he wants to, but he's always just making fun of some girl. It's always how some girl tried to hit on him or some fat girl or some girl this. And I'm like, dude, you're not that hot.
Yeah.
Nobody's buying into your BS. I don't know who these women or these people are that are your friends on Facebook, but you're just not that funny. Like, it's always about some girl. And that shows me that he's really insecure and he really doesn't have a lot of girls that like him. And he's really not...
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Do you go out to comedy shows sometimes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do comedy. So, yeah. But right. I barely like watching it. It's one of those things that.
Sometimes it's very painful when they're not funny.
Well, there are. I mean, I actually recently went to a couple shows that I was like, man, these are really, really, really funny. The Comedy Magic Castle in Hermosa Beach, Jay Leno's Club. Mm-hmm. I mean, the people were hysterical, polished. They're all professional and really, really funny people.
Yeah.
And they were doing I went to a corporate event, and they're paid comics that are, been on TV and stuff, and their stuff was just, it was just funny. I mean, it was just funny. Yeah. And you were like,
that's the thing, when you get professionals, when you get, you know, people that are really funny, it's enjoyable, you know. And often I go to, well, not often, okay, but many times when I go to see a comedy show at a club or something, it's not funny. You know, these guys go up there, and it's painful.
It's so uncomfortable and not fun. And it's one thing if somebody's just not on their game or maybe they're bombing and it's just their time to bomb. It's another thing if people just get up there and have an arrogant attitude and they're not really serving the audience. What I'm saying is there's many times where people can get a kind of laugh out of you, and maybe it's like, oh, I can't believe they said that laugh, or shock value, or a little shameful or whatever. But you don't really go away remembering them. You don't really go away retelling their jokes and going, oh my gosh, you got to go see this person.
Right.
It's forgettable.
Right.
At best. Or it's not forgettable and it's one of those things that are just so, so bad. But it's just the arrogance. Like, I can handle somebody that gets on stage and is nervous and maybe they forget and maybe they bomb or something. Mm-hmm. But what I don't like is the arrogant, too cool for school, let me try to be the bigger a-hole. And that attitude irritates the crap out of me.
Yeah.
And you see, what you do see, though, I'm seeing a lot of women that are just, and I've been told this by a lot of male comics, that the women just work harder.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have to. Right? They have to. Some people think it's like a free pass as a female comedian, but it works for you and against you right at the same time.
Yeah, because it's sort of like a boys' club.
It's such a boys' club. I mean, I'm not like super at the top or by any means, but it's totally a boys' club.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you funny on stage?
I'm freaking hysterical. Are
really?
You kidding me? God, I'm hysterical. I love me.
Well, you got to put on a show and we'll
I just
come
did one. Yeah. I'll do another one.
Yeah.
We'll
That's
do it.
That's true. You did.
Yeah. We'll do.
No,
we'll
but
do.
Wait a minute. That was the singing show.
It was a singing thing, but I always incorporate both. So if you come see my comedy, there'll be music in there because I do a lot of musical impersonations and I bring my guitar on stage. It's very character driven and story driven comedy. And there's a lot of musical twists. And then when I do music, my personality comes out, and I always get very nervous. So I end up doing a lot of comedy that's unexpected. Yeah. So it's always just fun. It's just fun. I'm not saying I'm the best at all because I'm so not. But I feel like
Do you bomb sometimes?
Oh, I've totally bombed. I haven't bombed in a long time, but I've totally bombed. There's not one comedian that hasn't bombed, and every great comedian's bombed because as you're working it out and figuring out your voice on stage and your whole shtick, I mean, you're taking risks, and sometimes it hits and sometimes it falls.
True.
But I'm learning more about. For me, just personally, my voice on stage is just about getting out of my own way and just having fun. Mm. And I can confidently say that I bring a lot of fun. Mm. I may not be the best.
At least I think so. No, I'm just like
a lot of fun.
It's
and
just
funny,
fun. Right? It's just fun. I just know that when people come and see me, and they're going to be served, is what I'm saying. They're going to have a good time. But I know I'm never going to be a comedian's, like I'm never going to be a comic's comic. Does that make sense? I'm never going to be like, oh my gosh, Kara. She's. I mean, comedians are never going to like think I'm great. And the reason for that is because I'm happy. And it's true. It's true.
Yeah, many like, of them are, being, are tortured souls.
Being like happy is considered not cool. Being jaded and being over it and whatever, fucking whatever. That's what's in.
Yeah.
Being happy and like bouncing on stage and laughing and having a freaking like a kid's birthday party on stage. It's not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
And I'm a female, so that's another good. That's
there
another
you
reason.
Go.
Yeah.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah, Christina.
All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. Hopefully, our guest is here. We'll be back right after this.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
3-2-3-0-8-1-5. That's 323-203-0815 and get in on the fun. Now, let's get back to Sam and Karen in the Morning on LA Talk Radio.
Okay, so I got a phone message that our phone guest had the time all wrong for the interview because of the time zones, you know, so they got the time wrong. So we'll reschedule her, and our studio guest is running a little late, apparently, so we'll see what happens there.
Do they know that this is an award-winning show?
Probably not, but they will today.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they
after
need to
today,
look. Yeah,
the
after
whole world knows.
After today, I mean, our guest list is going to go through the roof. We're going to have to just, they're going to have to get 3 years waiting list to get on the show.
There you go.
They should, chomp at the bits.
Yeah.
So listen.
Yes.
It says here, Sandra and Jesse James, Sandra Bullock.
Right. What are you eating, by the way?
Nothing.
Hmm?
Can you hear it?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Can you hear it?
The hunger within.
Can you imagine? Why don't we do a segment of the show where we just chew into the microphone?
Can you hear me chewing?
Yeah, I could.
Okay.
Yeah. So what are you eating?
Chocolate.
Chocolate, huh? That will give you some energy for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I love chocolate.
So, no, just like, listen, they have consulted divorce lawyers, and it does look like they possibly are going through with a divorce, and Sandra Bullock has consulted some of the big shot lawyers that handle the divorce for like Charlie Sheen and Heather Locklear and Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
So
I hope it's not Gloria Allred again. I can't stand the woman.
Really?
You know who she is? She always like takes sides with women, and but not that there's anything wrong with that, but she's just a very abrasive person. Oh, Shirley's here.
Here we go.
Come on in, Shirley.
Hello.
How's it going, Shirley? Have a seat over here. Sure. And we have Shirley Wilson in the studio.
Hello.
And put on your headphones. Shirley, you know the drill.
Yes, I do.
Yes. And Kira, Shirley has a show with, on LA Talk Radio. It's on Sundays at 6, right?
6 o'clock, yeah.
Yes. And tell us a little bit about the show, Shirley.
Well, the show started out strictly as therapy for me. I felt really blocked in. My baby was murdered some years ago, and I had taken medicine and a lot of therapy and all those things that I thought should have worked by now, and I still felt, had so many bad nights. And it seemed the moment I put on the mic at the station, I don't know, it felt as if something had unlocked.
Wow.
And so the first weeks of my doing the show was just that, you know. And
just
then
therapy, cathartic for you.
Yes, it was.
Yes.
And then it started to be even more. Mm. You know, I started to see that parents and other families could also be affected as I was, feel as if they had an opening, a portal.
Right.
And so I started to reach out and branch out, and here I am. Yeah.
So now when you say your baby, how old was your son at the time?
He was only 7 years old.
7 years old?
Yes.
Wow. So you see, Kira, it's not like he was involved in anything like gangs
of
or anything.
Not.
I mean, so this was like, what, like a stray bullet or something?
No.
No?
No, it was more like, horrifying than that.
And like, who kills a seven-year-old? Like, I know it happens, but I mean, you just...
Yeah. Well, this is so much what my mission is now. I want us as normal, intelligent human beings to understand that it's not just for the single parent to watch out for her child. It's for all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know a neighbor down the hall who, you may not know her, but she has children, or him, because fathers now are raising children alone too.
Mm-hmm.
When there are two parents, then, you know, you can kind of adjust. One can stay home, the other can go. But when there's one parent, there is going to be a time that parent can't be there when the child is there. And every child deserves in such an incredible way to be watched out for. My son wasn't supposed to be home, but he was home, and there was a home invasion. And now the police think it was robbery, whatever, because it's unsolved.
Really?
Yeah.
So just because he was a witness, you think something happened and they decided to get...
No. During those days, I was very much alone. I had had a challenging childhood, thinking that nobody loved me. I was mistaken, but that's why I wrote a book.
Yeah.
Because I really thought they didn't love me. And so I ended up very, very alone. and ended up going to Atlantic City, New Jersey, and I got a job, and that job was from 3 in the morning to 7 in the morning, which was horrific, and I didn't have friends, no one, and there were no babysitters for that hour. And that was the only hours they would give me, because at that time I would attract people. My personality and looks and all of that would attract the late night crowd. And so I had to accept the job because that was all we had. And but my son, who wasn't used to being home alone, there was something I guess would be in the air, you know, that he would know he was home and alone. And so he would call, you know, and crying and scared. And that would make me cry and be scared. And so I
bet. I mean, it makes you feel so helpless, you know?
It was a very helpless, helpless situation. But because it was 3 a.m. to 11 a.m., and that was a gambling town, there you can imagine the hustler-type people that were out at that time. And and I saw transactions going on.
Really?
Of drugs. And so I decided, well, hey, you know, let me handle this for you guys, and a few people, but and I decided to do that, and of course it brought that income for, it was only for a short time, but as I said in my book, I didn't have that short time.
Right.
You know,
I'm a little confused. I don't mean to cut you off, just so that everybody understands. So you're saying
I sold.
Oh, okay. So you were dealing or working with transactions with drugs.
Yes.
Okay. Not to just just so that there's clarity.
No, no problem.
Because
yeah. No,
I didn't. I was confused.
No, no. This is a good thing, because what I want people to stop doing is stop judging people.
Yeah.
Because it's important, especially stop drug judging people who are taking care of children. Stop judging and help, doggone it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's for the safety of our country. And and if we keep pointing fingers and keep not being there for others, then it's our country that's deteriorating, not not just that family, not just that parent. There should have been neighbors that I knew, because we need to bring back the village, you know.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't a choice that I would have made with my child. You understand? That's that wasn't my character, my nature. And I don't think it really is almost anybody that's sane.
Yeah.
And we have to start remembering these hustler type people you see out here, these gang members, these all this. Stop pointing the finger and start to realize there's an evolution, and that if you had walked exactly in their shoes, if you had been born exactly where they were, you would have done the same thing they would have.
Yeah. I think I would agree with you on that. I think there's no one can know. No one can know what anybody's background is, and no one can know what decisions they would make had they had the same variables. Nobody knows. It's one of those things that you can only speculate. So my heart goes out to you, because I mean I've seen stuff too. You know, I've seen stuff too where I'm like, oh, okay. But I just for clarification's sake, so you're saying that you were living in you said Atlantic City, and you found was a part time job from 3 to 7 a.m.
Well, it was full time.
Oh, it was full time.
3 a.m. to 7 a.m.
Okay.
In the morning. See that 8 hours? I mean 3 a.m. to 11. I'm sorry.
Right, that's what I was okay. Saying. Okay.
Yes. I said 7 at first.
You said 7, then you said 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we figured it
so
out.
So you were but that job was legit, right?
Oh yes, yes. It was,
that was
I was
legit.
A bartender.
You were a bartender and you're working those hours and you were just hoping to kind of get through, and it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
And so that's when you transitioned into working in with the drugs.
Yes.
Okay.
I begged the owner to give me different hours, that I had a baby at home alone, but that's what I'm saying. We've grown cold, you know, and even it should have been switched maybe with someone else. But he you know, being a young woman, being whatever, you know, you have an attraction. And I think that it did. The bar would be full of people, you know. And so he wasn't giving that up, you know. And I knew I had to give it up, because it wasn't working for me and my son. It wouldn't work for any parent and any children, even if
I hear you.
Yeah. So where were you originally from? Where were you born?
I was from Alabama, and I grew up in a very, very small town. The town was so small that you could not count to four before you passed through downtown.
Yeah.
And so I was very sheltered, extremely sheltered, and And as I came out into the world, I was very oppressed, you know, very frightened, and had to put on a poker face really fast because I had children start. I got pregnant when I was 16.
Really?
Uh-huh. And so a scary little country girl having children that she was in love with, madly in love with, made me put on a poker face. And that's another thing that I wanted to say to people. A lot of people that you see, maybe they look attractive to you. We need to stop, and just kind of listen to the words under the words, you know, because I was trying to act as if I knew what I was doing out here in these towns and cities like L.A., And I was scared to death that I would lose one of my children or something would happen. The most panic that I ever had, I would have nightmares that if something happened to one of my babies, and for it to happen, there was no words.
Unthinkable.
My nightmares did not match anything near what it was like. Yeah.
So what were the circumstances of getting married so? I mean, not getting married, but getting pregnant so early.
I got married, too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, at least that.
But,
you know?
But it was an abusive marriage. Some of the uneducated people, and I used to blame my husband and his family, but they were very, very uneducated. My husband left school at the 11th grade, and his parents much, much earlier than that. His father, I think, had come from a time in his life where, you know, controlling the woman was the way that it went. And so he was definitely teaching that to his son. And they did it through physical abuse, you know. And so I went through 7 years of intense abuse from 16 to about 22, 23.
Wow. So you got married at 16?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a story.
So you were with him and he was abusive, and when did you leave, or did he leave you, or what?
I tried leaving. I had this great mom because I was adopted. There was so much going on there in my life that had me very confused, and the adoption was by my mother's sister, my birth mother's sister, but they had so much trauma. There were was a lot of trauma in my family as far as emotions, and so it left me very confused and made me reach out to this family that wasn't loving, and but I was fooled into thinking they were loving.
Right. Yeah. You looked for something you didn't have at home. Would you say that?
Yeah. I thought I was.
So you were adopted, but there wasn't a lot of love at home.
No.
Wow.
No.
So it was. So they adopted you probably because they didn't have a choice, huh?
Well, let me put it this way. When I was a little girl, there was a lot of love. And I don't know what happened when I started to get busty or whatever. My adopted mother had issues with that. So around 12, things massively changed, just drastically changed. And so during that time, I was so confused, and the adoption had me so confused all along. So I caused my poor mom a lot of trouble lying. Not that bad trouble, just wanting attention. And so I would come home with a profuse lie just to get interest.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's interesting what I have to say. And so it caused her a lot of struggle, and therefore I was confused. And so I ended up...
But you were young, you know? I mean, you were so young.
Yeah. But that was hard for her to understand because she hadn't had it. And so that's happened a lot in America. It's not just a few families. A lot of people have, and I know people listening to me shaking their heads like, a lot of families have had trouble, you know, that kind of trouble where people were emotionally abused or whatever and didn't know how to pass that love on.
Right, yeah.
They were good people, my parents, very good people, honorable people, hardworking people. I had never known anything like drugs. I had never known anything like unkept homes, you know, unclean clothes. I had never known those kinds of things. But then I married some people who weren't quite like that. You know, they weren't tidy like my parents had been. And so I went through all of these cultural shocks, and then the abuse just put me in a place that I got very, very terrified. I was very, very, very scared, very nervous, and just tensed up really bad until I got sick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Imagine growing up in an environment like that, you know, and you're a child, you don't understand what happens, and suddenly your mom starts treating you differently.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that would confuse a child to no end, you know?
Yeah, in a lighter way. I had a stepmom that she got oddly jealous of my relationship with my dad. Mm. And as a kid, when you're 12, 13 years old, I'm not even smart enough to think on those terms. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm not malicious or... It's not that I'm perfect. I'm a kid. But I'm just saying, she would accuse me of trying to, like, break up their marriage. And she would, like, compare our jean sizes and be like, I wear this size jeans. It was weird shit.
And how old were you?
I was, like, 12 and 13.
Really?
And I remember making I made a joke with her, and she'd be like, oh, yeah? Well, what size jeans do you wear? And I'd be like, it had nothing to do with me. It's just extremely insecure and territorial.
Yeah.
And so as you're growing up and you're a girl and you start getting looking more like a girl and a woman or whatever it is, it becomes a threat.
Yes.
And it's extremely unhealthy, and it's extremely misplaced anger and fear, because the kind of attention and the kind of love you have with your father is completely different and should be protected and not seen as a threat. And it screws up your head as a kid, because you're like, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't help it. I got it going on. Okay. Yeah. Like, lady, don't be jealous. That okay. I got it. Okay. And no, I'm just playing. But it's sick and twisted is what it is. And it screws with your brain. But no, I got yelled at for trying to break up their marriage and stuff. And I was like, what?
That's awful for a child.
It is. And I'm like, I don't even have enough brain cells at this age to know how to do that, or even I just wanted a ride home from my friends. Mm-hmm. That's all.
I know.
Weird stuff.
And it's even weirder when it's not your birth father. See, mom was my blood.
Oh, okay.
And my dad wasn't my birth father. So mom started to get jealous of me.
Really?
And I couldn't figure that out, because daddy was my world. See, I got adopted when I was 6 weeks old.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I got
brought
into the
home. That's
your
dad. That's
daddy, you know. And once I came upstairs and I wasn't quite... done with that age of shirtless, you know, it wasn't quite matured yet. Mm-hmm. And I came up, and mom accused me of trying to show my father myself, you know.
Really?
And I could not grasp it. It was daddy, you know what I mean? And so that was so, so painful. And it seems that's what I mean. When I turned that age, something happened with me
and
mom.
Did you see Precious, the movie?
Yes.
That dynamic between the mother and the daughter was...
I cried so much.
I mean, I know that kind of person. Yeah. It's basically just a very abused person themselves that's been hurt and abused.
Yes.
And they've not had any healing or resolve.
Yes.
And so they project it onto a child, and they perpetrate the child. And it's just crazy. It's like a mind screw. Mm-hmm. It screws with the kid's mind, and it's crazy. It's just freaking crazy.
Right.
Like, you're just a kid. You don't even know anything. Like, I remember when I was a kid one time, my dad, and I remember feeling so ashamed after this, because kids don't feel like this. Kids are just kids. But my dad was laying on the bed with my mom, and this is my biological parents, and I was sitting there, and my dad said that his leg hurt or something. And all I did was reach over, and basically I felt bad that my dad's leg hurt. I just went, I just put my hand over it, but I kind of touched his dick. But I didn't know. I didn't even know.
Oh, let me tell you.
Girl, I didn't know I touched it, though. I didn't know I touched it. I was freaking like 5 or 6 years old. I felt bad my dad's leg hurt. And I kind of swiped his dick a bit.
Yeah.
But my mom freaked out. She's like, did you see what she just did?
Oh,
and my dad was like, Lorraine, chill out. She's freaking 5. She knows what she did. And then I'm like going, what the hell did I just do?
And you still remember that, huh?
It made me feel dirty. It made me feel like a gross pervert.
Let me tell you what happened when I was little. That's why I got so confused. And this that's why I'm so glad that now I'm speaking out and I'm able to talk, because these are the things that are really healing me, and to be able to relate to some other normal person who hears what I'm talking about. You know, I was a little girl and I had this uncle on my daddy's side. And so my uncle had me on his lap. And I was little. I was so little that my legs were just like right up here by his knees. So I couldn't have been no more than four, you know. And he was doing something with himself, showing me or whatever. And my aunt came out. These people weren't my blood, but, you know, they were aunt and uncle to me. And so she came out and caught this. She did whatever, screaming at him, and told my mom. And so they got the police involved and everything. You know, it was brought up. But my mom, I remember, like you're saying, she talked so bad to me as if I was a bad. And to this day, I remember that. And I was just such a little kid. And she said ugly, slutty things about me as a little girl. And so this is something that's went down into my head, and there was no therapist to talk to. There were nobody.
It stays with you. I mean, kids are so impressionable.
It makes you feel, there's something about sexuality what, especially with young ages, is any kind of molestation or pedophilia or anything, it's the most physically but yet psychologically can screw you up, because what can happen is that children, it's like your body is independent sometimes of your mind. So what can happen is if a kid is touched or fondled or shown something, their body can be receptive. They can be turned on, they can be intrigued, but then in their heart and in their mind, they know something's wrong. They don't feel safe, and they know that it's bad. So there's a conflict within the child, and they feel ashamed, and they don't want to tell anybody. And that happens to a lot of kids, you know. It just, and it screws with your mind. And not that I really had a lot of those kind of severe examples, but I experienced, even just in mild ways, a real divided sense within yourself of like, why do I feel bad that I accidentally swiped my dad's dick? It's really not my fault. I mean, but you know, little things. I mean, but I mean, I have a lot of little things like that where you're just a freaking kid. You know what I mean? Relax. And you need, and I want to say, these women, and first of all, these women themselves have been severely abused. They're insecure. Healthy people don't react that way. These women need to get themselves checked.
They
need to get checked.
If you know that you're having issues of any kind that involves a minor or a child, you're jealous of them, you're saying bad things to them, you're right. No, you are accountable. That person needs to get themselves checked out. You know? And I know that no matter what you go through, you do not have to pass such things on to your children. I went through a lot and I never passed anything that on to my children. So I know that there is a point, and if that had ever come to my life in any kind of way, I would have known that you better take care of yourself, you know, because children are at stake. And to pass your jealousies and your sickness and it destroys. And, you know, I was so blocked up. I was so scared. I would have to sit in cars for I don't know how long before I went into places for meetings and things and just try to get my body where it would relax, because I would be petrified and the tension started to get caught up in me, and I started to be blocked in a real bad way. And so illness started to take over also, as I was trying to take care of children that I had been programmed into believing that I wasn't qualified to do. So, you know, it's kind of amazing how you can be stuck in that place. And then just to know that I'm just a human being, it wasn't abnormal. You know, I was in a normal family and a normal life, you know, in a normal country, and it wasn't some oppressed country somewhere, and yet this happened to me, which made me know, you come out and talk. So start bringing dialogue, start people, normal people,
it's healing,
to talking, because not only is it healing, but it's also wakes up the consciousness of other people, you know, to start to think about others, you know, so that we can get a safer place to live. If we don't start talking about these things and on a consistent basis, and yes, that's what my show is all about. I want to bring music and rhythm and soul and comedy and poetic stuff, you know, all of those things. So I'm collaborating now with artists that I'm going to bring in to play message music, because, you know, rap used to not be all of this cutting down women and all this ugly stuff. It used to be music with a message.
Right.
And then that
expression.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Then the youngsters got hold of it and could make some millions.
It's ego, man. You know, what's her name from the Fugees? Lauryn Hill.
Oh, yes.
She came out with that song. She's like, music is supposed to inspire.
Yes.
Why is everything something so tired? And she was really speaking out against, you're so tired. You're not inspiring. And she's just talking about basically like rap was it was very pioneer in its day. And it was about speaking out and education and inspiring people. And not that it's not at all anymore, because there's some great, still some great artists. But, you know, a lot of it is, and I still like it. I'm not going to lie. Girl, pump it. Woo! I will pop it. Oh my gosh. I was in my car. This is dirty, but I was like in that car and I bumped it. And I'm such a stupid white girl that's tried to like, you know, I got soul. But don't even.
You got soul. I can tell.
Don't even get it twisted. But I had all four windows down in my beat up car, and I was like, she moves her body like a cyclone. Make sure what I do it all night long.
All right now.
Yeah. I mean, bumping it. Show they got looks. Show they got class. Show they got hips and show they got hands. My lady dropping like low, like ram, 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 ram. You know, you know. Oh, I love it. I'll get it. I dance all the time to hip hop in my car.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me tell you. Me too. I decided to start looking for places that I could just take like once a week or something.
Yeah.
And I could, you know, it's hard to find the music that I like and the ambiance so I can go dance it off.
Get it out.
I need to go get it off, you know.
Yeah. I do. I love it. I love a lot of the tunes. I mean, some of it, though, it's really a struggle because some of it's just so damn dirty.
Okay.
But I love the beat.
Me too.
So I'm like, you know, and I'm praying. I'm like, God, do you want me to turn it? Can I just like make my own words up? Because it's not just that there's like, oh, it's dirty.
Yes, God, about rap. Music.
One of these things. It's what you're programming your mind.
Yeah.
And I have to watch out sometimes because then it puts you in a different zone or something. But I like the beats of it.
Yeah, me too. And sometimes I'll find myself jamming to something and the tune will have called me all kinds of ugly things.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, you mean that I was jamming to that statement?
Because
right
they get you, man. Oh, Rihanna, though. Rihanna, she's got a new jam out. You know, Rude Boy?
No,
girl. She's got a new jam out, and you know that a man wrote these lyrics, cause no woman writes this shit.
Really?
But it goes, but I won't tell the words. She's like, Garu Bubba, can you Garu Bubba, is you tag it, love it, I love it.
Okay.
Tonight I'ma let you walk a hot on.
Oh,
tonight
okay.
Tonight I'ma take a taka bow wow. Sorry. If you want it, I'll get it. Not a fan
of
that. We gotta get back to your story, but no, I was having a jam session.
No,
girl, we got a jam.
Don't keep us on the jam session, don't.
Yeah, no, I just I'll get it going.
Yeah.
It's hard. That's a good one though. It's a good one. It's a bad.
Yeah,
It's a bad, but a good one.
One.
It's so good, it's bad.
Yeah.
So bad, it's good, or however it is.
And I want to really bring the artists who have that same kind of beat.
Uh huh.
But that they're bringing
inspiring.
Some incredible music.
Yeah.
There's one guy that I just wanted to be here Sunday so bad. I had a virus to catch my computer. I mean, that sucker was just eating me alive on my computer. And I was trying to get the music downloaded so I could come on to the show. And this guy, Martre, he's so remarkable. And he's got this jamming beat. In fact, he's going to be at Zanzibar on Thursday, I think it is. But he's bringing this beat, like just like what you're doing, but he's got so much content, so much message in the music.
Right.
And so more and more, and I'm collaborating with must be about 5 different artists right now that are just like that. Their jam is so jam. I'd be like, yes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got now when that beat is coming, I'm now getting a message that's going into my head.
Yeah.
And the reason I want to do that so much is some of the main healing that got me to the station, because I'd say a few years ago, I wouldn't have even been ready for the station because I was too angry.
Right.
You know, I was like, full of venom, and so that wasn't going to work on a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not quite that much.
Yeah.
But
a little is okay.
Yeah, a little is okay.
Like sprinkle it a little bit.
You know.
Healthy.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, anger is part of that recovery process, you know, and you have to go through that as well after grieving and, you know, and so you got to work it out, you know, so I can understand where you'd have a lot of anger.
Yeah.
Oh, Sam. You know? Oh, Sam, I got
I mean,
I
you
got
haven't
really
had
sick.
An easy life, obviously, you
no.
know. And no. So I mean, but how did it work out that you got married at 16? Your parents obviously had to give their consent,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was rough.
And they were okay with that?
No.
No?
No. No. My mom, like I'm saying, they loved me. And, mm-hmm. and like we're saying, all of that inside your home, this was this normal, great home. And there you have those little spurts where you touch your dad's dick and your mom goes off.
Your mom, put that down! How can, I find the funny in anything. Maybe that's just the way I cope.
No. That was funny.
Give a girl a trauma, you know. Yeah. Now she's probably afraid to touch dicks, right?
I'm glad you stayed okay, you know.
Well, I mean, it's freeing to be, like you said, to be able to go, hey, you give a voice. And you give I don't want to use labels, but you can put a name to what something is, right?
Yeah.
It's not that they didn't love you.
Right.
It's just that we're all working out of our brokenness. And
that's
they're
right.
broken too, you
that's
know?
Right.
So that's how it is. It's like I love my mom and my dad. I really do. But they were doing the best they could. Well, I mean, they were doing...
I know what you mean. You get a hiccup when you say the best they could. Because,
well, I mean, yeah, I mean, yeah. In a way they did. It's uh-huh. And I can't.
All they could, maybe.
They did that, yeah. And it's one of these things that, I mean, I've definitely had to deal with anger issues with stuff. And, but at the same time, it's like, and I mean, I constantly, it's like, I am not perfect. And I can't just think, well, my imperfections are better than someone else's imperfections.
That's right.
And, I have to go, okay, well, God forgives me, and I have to somehow work through it to have forgiveness. And not that I've even been that, you know, I haven't had it like what you've been through. But there's been some things mm-hmm. where I've had to go, you know, and I think like what it sounds like what you're saying is that anger, like you said, Sam, is part in a very natural part of the human experience and a part of the healing and part of the forgiveness process. But it can be a prison.
Oh.
Where it's only prison of one.
You can not come out of it.
Yeah.
A lot of people I've met I never came out, and they are angry if they see you come out because they feel, you know, there are people who kind of, you can see they look at me as if I didn't really, that it wasn't important to me or something,
mm-hmm.
losing my son, that I'm not, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Because I try to let people know to be very careful with that with me. Don't treat me as if it's not devastating, because
yeah.
it is, even though I have found my joy.
Mm-hmm.
I can laugh
Amen.
Now,
yeah.
but don't take my laughter and the
and
fact that I want to bring joy and
minimize
what happened
yeah.
to my son. But to get back to what you were saying, how did I get married at such a early age? And did they approve? Of course not. They loved me, and they did not want me to marry this family who had roaches and this and that.
Wow.
And I had never known all of this, and they lived in a little house with no inside plumbing. And so my mom had worked, and really she had did all she did having this little baby. She was a good lady. She's just confused.
Yeah.
And so she had built a new home. You know, our house was the house of the, you know, the whole community, just beautiful
uh-huh.
place, beautiful fence, built custom, just beautiful. I was known to be the little rich girl kind of thing, even though I was going through hell in the house.
Yeah.
And so me getting him, paying me some attention, because I was skinny when I was little. And in that day, before Twiggy and them got it together, I was skinny. Skinny wasn't the ticket, you know?
Oh, really? Well, you'd be a hit in L.A., girl.
I know!
Yeah. You know, work
and then
it.
I go and get some curves when I find out skinny is in. So this boy paying attention to me made me sneak at 14. I met him when I was 14.
Right.
So we started to sneak around, and I was still a virgin until my mom decided, I'm sending you away from him. You know, you're going to your birth mother. And I had been there, which was kind of like his parents, the roaches or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not to speak badly of my any of them. You know, mm-hmm. it's just what it was.
Yeah.
And so the night before I left, he said, let's have a baby. you know. And so he got my virginity that night, and uh-huh. And sure enough, that one time I was pregnant.
And you went along though.
I mean, yeah, you know.
Because you needed the love. You
needed the love, and they were sending me to. This mother was sending me to another mother who didn't want me. This mother was mad with me. That mother was saying, don't send her here. Man. And then he said, come to me. Uh-huh. So I'm saying,
naturally.
Okay, here I am. So sure enough, I get there and I'm pregnant. And then now this mother down here in Alabama don't want nothing else to do with me. And that mother wants to abort the baby.
Wow.
And this was the first time inside me that I felt something that really loved me. I don't know.
Yeah.
I could just feel it inside me. Now, this person in here loves me and nobody's going to touch her or the baby. And so I left. I got in touch with him and his parents, mm-hmm. got a bus ticket, and I went there. And then being pregnant and in Alabama, and this mother not going to take all of that. So she says, okay, we'll sign the papers. But she was so angry that she came to sign the papers at the courthouse and wouldn't even look at me. She was so angry, bless her heart. And so she left me that day. She was so angry, she just got up and left. And then she sent my dad, who was very uneducated, and this wasn't his kind of thing, but... she let him come in the next day and he signed the papers and I got married when I was 16. Mm-hmm. And so it was bad.
Yeah. Now, so you had your first child at 16.
I had just turned 7. I prayed that 10 days in.
Yeah.
I wanted to be 17 so bad. Something was better about 17 to deliver a baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just 17.
So was this the one that you lost later? Is this the child?
No.
So how many children do you have?
I have 3 children. My only son is who was murdered.
Yes. I see. Okay, yes. So you have girls.
Uh-huh. They were the first. Girls were the first. They were 12 and 13 years older than their brother.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got divorced and then remarried? Is that what happened?
No. I was very, very not wanting people to touch me too much, but religion... would get me, because somebody believing in God, I would be like, this is a good person. And it was never the case.
Oh, girl, I made that mistake. He had a Christian stamp on him. Should have said a freak stamp on him.
Okay.
Some of those Christians, and not just Christians, anybody, I mean, you can hide behind religion, and I'm just trying to tell you, you're still a freak.
Oh, wait a minute. Listen, there's a bunch of them.
Oh, my gosh. You got to watch out for some of them more.
I'm telling you.
Some of those Christians, and I'm a Christian, I want to marry a Christian man, but don't get it twisted.
Okay.
I've had some...
You better be careful.
I've had some run-ins with some crazies, and I kind of let it go on a bit, because I was like, wait a minute, he loves God.
Oh, yeah.
And then I found out, no, maybe he does love God, but he's still whacked up, and maybe he doesn't know what he believes, just because he's in the freaking church, and he's like serving in the church, and all that stuff.
I had gone through so many churches looking for love, like I'm saying, I gotta mm-hmm. admit, in all the wrong places, including the churches, and uh-huh. and by the time I found a religion called Islam, you know, mm-hmm. And so I became American Muslim, you know, mm-hmm. and so this guy, when I met him a few years later, he was a Muslim, and so that religion and that discipline that I had seen, which like you're saying, the reason I couldn't linger there is because it was so many husbands who wanted me, you know, those kinds of things. And
right.
and so I was still that in my being, because it, you know, it was the one thing that had this real strategic line to God. It was like, it's about God. And so it was one of the religions that stuck the most during that time,
mm-hmm.
that this is really about God. And so when I met my husband, my son's father, I kind of automatically thought, this Muslim, and so nobody else could get to me, but he could. Mm-hmm. And so one time and I get pregnant, I said, boy, you don't need to let nobody touch you. But and so I got pregnant with my son, and I thought, you know, you're in trouble, you're sick. My body was in trouble by then, the tension that I was telling you about. I couldn't even stand up anymore. I was just in real
really?
Severe trouble. And I got pregnant with my son, and thought that I needed to abort him, and went to an abortion clinic, mm-hmm. and sit there and said, okay, I can't do this, lady, just make the appointment. And she said, sweetheart, you're not in an abortion clinic. You're in a right to life clinic.
Wow. You're in the wrong place.
Yeah, I was in the wrong, I was in the right place. Thank God.
Yeah. Be right back. I got to go to the bathroom. Vroom. Start the car.
Yeah. No, but she said such amazing things. And I walked out of there on cloud 1,000 because I really wanted my baby. And so from that moment to the day, he was just the pride. He was such a incredible blessing to our lives.
Mm. Right.
7 years of bliss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Shirley, so you wrote a book.
Yes.
And it was just published.
Mm-hmm.
What is the name?
Light in the Darkest Hours.
Light in the Darkest Hours. There you go. Very appropriate, I think.
Yes. Mm.
And we'll put a link to your book on our website.
Okay.
So people can find it and stuff.
Okay.
And so tell us a little bit about the book. What did you include in there?
Well, what I wanted to do is just kind of, the book has a little bit of a history to it too that's kind of funny. I started to write the autobiography, which was going to be this thick, big book. You understand?
Uh-huh.
And I was on one. I was just writing like you should have seen the keyboard.
Really?
You know, so it was coming at me like lightning. I'm like, I'm a chapter a day. I'm going to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And so I went on a retreat at a place in Santa Barbara where it's no telephones, nothing. And I was writing chapters, I mean. And so I lost the chapters in cyberspace somewhere. Like,
oh my God!
I had 8 that was protected, but then I think it was 8 or 9. But then the rest of them just lost. And I was up in this beautiful place with the lakes and the statues of spiritual people, and you know, should have been in bliss, peace, and I was up there cussing and mad. You know?
Oh man,
it was the most horrifying thing.
Oh man,
and so I couldn't write another thing, you know. And so I started working on social networks and stuff. I'm like, I got to do this. I got to come out because I knew something about in writing the book was making me know that no, this is what you're meant to do. This is what you have to do.
Mm.
And so I knew that I had to publish this book, but I could not go in the autobiography direction anymore. It was just, it was a very painful thing to dig up all of these troubles.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, and so I took and decided to, in the 8 chapters, to bring in other parallels, you know, like the people who were normal in the postal thing. You know how they say you're going to go postal?
Right.
Because so many normal people who passed all kind of exams, they were normal, turned into murderers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because people were so abusive to them.
Mm-hmm.
The postal business has a history of being very, very oppressive within the ranks and files of the employees there. And so I just took things like that and paralleled it with the part of my autobiography that I could finish. And decided, you know, I have to have the book and I have to start to let people know that it was just a scared young girl out here that people needed to hear me. They needed to be friends, not because I deserve it or anything, but for the good of our country, for the good of our community, so that all of us can be safe. We need to start listening to one another, and we need to start not just caring about our own little section, you know,
totally
my child,
agree, yeah.
You know, my child, my house, you know.
Yeah.
And so the book is telling you the story how I was raped by the police in Birmingham because I was trying to cheat on this abusive guy, and he deserved to be cheated on. But I know that God has said, no, nobody, don't do it. But and so while I was out with trying to be with, because guys were very attracted to me, and he had made me think that I was skinny and ugly and nobody liked me. Well, when I went to the University of Alabama, through coercion with this guy, I ended up in school. When I was out there in the bus stops and stuff, guys were whistling at me from everywhere. It was crazy. I had never known anything like that.
Well, and if your whole life you've not been given healthy love, you don't know what healthy love looks like.
No.
And somebody's like going,
okay.
And they're going, go on, girl. You know, you're going to... You're gonna listen. Respond.
And so I, the police found me in a vacant lot with this guy necking with the smoky, I mean, you know, frosty windows and shine the lights in. And instead of them running us away or arresting us or whatever they would have done, they took him up the path and they, one of them, you know, coerced me into having sex with him, him having sex with me. And
wow,
then the other
one. What a life, Shirley. Yeah. What a life.
Yeah, yeah. And so the book is detailing some of this because I never got to tell anybody that. I came back home to this abusive guy, and I never got to say anything. I never got to even, and I was petrified.
What are you going to say? Hey, I was out trying to cheat on you, and I got caught, and then I got freaking raped. I need you to go kick that police's freaking ass right now. We'll deal with the cheating part later, but I need you to go
raised from the dead, right?
Give him a good country ass whooping for me, and then we can deal with this other.
I get to say that after I raised from the dead, because you know he would have killed me. He was and that's what I believed. I believed he would have killed me, and so.
Oh man, that's
So the book tells them.
Oh my gosh.
But the book sounds inspirational, and I know you've got a lot of great messages there and everything.
Yes.
And I totally urge everybody to listen to Shirley every Sunday at 6 on Channel 2, right here on LA Talk Radio. And the show is called The Shirley Wilson Show. Appropriately
enough. Thank you so much, Shirley.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
And for everybody that wants the book, we're going to put a link on our page, because I think it's like a long link, isn't it? Like to the book, or do you have like a simple website?
No, I think it's a link, and it goes to Author House Publishers. So,
right,
yeah,
and we'll put the link on there. And this has been amazing, Shirley. Thank you so much
for
joining us.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Had a good laugh despite everything. I love it. I have some of my best laughs in the middle of crazy talk.
I know. I really enjoyed it. And this is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
For us to take tragedy and bring the joy and sift it through it and then start to do something about it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Absolutely. And on that note, everybody, thank you all for joining us. And We'll be back here tomorrow.
More Wendy Show.
You're listening to Sam and Kara in the Morning, which airs every weekday from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, originating from the Los Angeles Talk Radio studios. If you have questions about the show or would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities, please direct all correspondence to info@latalkradio.com. Sam and Kara in the Morning is a production of LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.